are you? Chris, Marsha's on, so let's start. Marsha, you missed the Anabakoach if you want to do it on your own. We're continuing our study of the future temple. Marsha, with those questions you asked me, do you want to continue that discussion before we start? Or you have other questions?
I read it this morning, and I did not look up the information you directed me to. I plan to do that later.
Okay.
So, wait.
But the first question I answered, there was no direction. So, was that satisfactory, or do you want to continue that?
You might tell Chris what it is, so it's not a private conversation.
Well, I will be happy to do that if I could remember it exactly, but it was essentially why can we bring Mashiach if the temple wasn't sufficient, first and second temple wasn't sufficient to bring Mashiach? How can we do so now without the temple? How does that work? Was essentially the question. Is that correct, Marsha?
Right. And I was surprised that the temple was actually around for over 400 years each time.
Yes.
That's a long time.
Yes, it was. Although the second temple was not quite the same as the first. During the time that Solomon was king, there was actually no wars anywhere in the world. During that period of about 40, 50 years because of the temple's existence. And obviously, people didn't know that. They don't make the connection and all of that. But it's an amazing, amazing system. And that's really part of what our study is to come to appreciate what we've lost so that we can really yearn for having it returned.
And more.
But I wanted to be clear. Were you comfortable or satisfied with the answer that I gave you?
Yeah.
And just briefly, Chris, the answer that I gave was, again, if I can remember briefly, the temple... We can bring Mashiach if with enough restriction that overrides the natural process that strongly. And actually, there was a time when that took place, which was what we call the events of Purim. But because not every human being was in the world at that time, Mashiach could not manifest. But after that event, we've had many opportunities to bring Mashiach. But there are two ways that Mashiach can come. One is a natural process, and one is the wondrous miracle type process. When the earlier generations did not bring the Mashiach, it is more than likely we're in the process of this natural process. But again, that can be changed by us doing the restriction, by recognizing. And ultimately, those of us connected to the Zohar, who promises us to be the Ark, there may be an Armageddon war, God forbid, but it doesn't have to impact or affect those who are in the Ark. And that's really the answer to the question. We will be able to bring it because that is the plan of God. It's part of the natural process. And it may come naturally. It made the resurrection of the dead may actually be a medical scientific process. Or it may be that we'll use the 72 names and you know, people will come out of the graves. But whichever way the process manifests, the prophecies are there for one of those two, for both of those two paths. And it may be people will, their consciousness of people will define the path that they experience. I think that's what I answered. Is it close enough, Marcia?
I think so. It's always our consciousness that helps us perceive whatever is going on.
But the earlier generations, while they were higher spiritually, they're not malchut. They're not the manifestation pattern. So there's only been three times when the world had every human soul in the world. Once was the generation of the flood, and once was the generation of the knowledge, which is the desert generation. And that is the only time when then everybody has been present. So there have been many times when people were in unity, but because not every human soul was there, the Mashiach cannot manifest without a complete vessel. Is that the hand being held up with a question, Chris?
Yeah, I have something when you're finished.
I'm finished.
The Zohar talks about the dew descending to cause the resurrection of the dead. So is that just a code word then?
Yes, the dew is a gematria 39. The Hebrew word is tal, and 39 is a it's a code word within the tetragrammaton. So it's definitely, I mean, we can perceive it as a physicality, that it will manifest as that is the pattern. But that's just one of the prophecies. And if the resurrection of the dead takes place, one of the secrets that's been revealed through the Kabbalah is that dew is really the waters of the mikveh. And that is a way of resurrecting the dead using the mikveh. There are some secrets and some code words that are utilized.
Well, we don't have a mikveh. Where do we do? Build one?
Well, it's always the best way. But you have a mikveh. You have a running stream. You have a mountain pool of water. A spring, a lake. You're not far from a mikveh. It's just not called a mikveh. It's called a lake or a stream. But that's what it is. So.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah, correct. I heard it.
Let's continue with the future temple, the outer courtyard. Let me now explain the details of the outer courtyard, also known as the women's courtyard. This is the place where the Chayot, the angels of the world of Yetzirah, receive their sustenance. The distance from the outer wall of the inner courtyard to the outer wall of the outer courtyard, which surrounds the inner courtyard on all sides, is 100 cubits in all directions. And you already know the secret of 100. It's 10 times 10. It's a perfect structure. The outer courtyard includes the area behind the Holy of Holies. The outer courtyard surrounds the entire temple building, including the back. From the back west wall of the temple building to the west wall of the outer courtyard is a distance of 11 cubits, corresponding to the Vav and the Hay. In the first two temples, the outer courtyard did not surround the temple building, but was situated to the east of the inner courtyard. What is the reason for this difference? It is because the temple, way, way down, is the place of impurity and the angels of vengeance. Excuse me, not because behind the temple, way, way down, is the place of impurity and the angels of vengeance. The original courtyard did not encompass this place so as not to give them any share. But in the future, the world will be purified and the false gods will totally disappear. All that remains will be pure. This is alluded to in the verse, "For then I will turn to the nations, a pure language that they make all call upon the name of the Tetragrammaton to serve him with one consent." This is why the courtyard will surround the temple building on all sides, for nothing will prevent this. We also have some prophecies about earthquakes or natural changes in the landscape of Israel, whereby right now the Temple Mount is not sufficiently height-wise, lengthwise, is not sufficient to build this temple. And the land must change in order to do that. And we, as I said, we have prophecies indicating, as part of the Armageddon War, God forbid, there will be a earthquake or other natural movement of the land to affect that process. The position of the vestibules of the gates of the outer courtyard. The outer courtyard has three gates. They are exactly the same as the gates of the inner courtyard, except that the vestibules of the gates of the inner courtyard are outside their gates. They stand in the outer courtyard, whereas the vestibules of the gates of the outer courtyard stand inside their gates, inside the outer courtyard. The reason is that the vestibule, Yulam, is equal to 77 plus 1 for the word as a whole, or the kolel, provides the holy bread, the lechem, that is given to all Israel, and passes to the outside through the gates. The outer courtyard is strong enough to withstand the intensity of the light emerging there, which is why the vestibules of the gates of the inner courtyard are located outside their gates in the outer courtyard. However, the Temple Mount, the area surrounding the outer courtyard, does not have the strength to bear this intensity, and therefore the vestibules of the gates of the outer courtyard stand inside their gates, inside the outer courtyard. In essence, the building structure immediately outside of the outer courtyard wall, that intensity of light is too strong for buildings. As we have seen, there are three cells on each side of each gate to balance the flow of sustenance emerging from the gate. The walls of these chambers derive from the vestibule walls, except that the vestibule walls are built with the light of the Vav, while the chamber walls are built with the light of the He. For this reason, in the case of the gates of the outer courtyard, the walls of the two chambers immediately adjoining each gate on either side of the outside are set back one cubit further from the gate. Then the corresponding walls of the vestibule from the gate and the corresponding walls of the vestibule. For the vestibule walls are 6 cubits thick, while those of the chambers are only 5 cubits thick. For this reason, the prophet states very precisely, "and a border of 1 cubit before the chambers," and he relates the chambers not to the gates, but to the vestibules. See and understand, the bread the vestibule goes no further than three levels, the sanctuary and the two courtyards. For the sanctuary gates, which are on the level of Atzilut, and those of the inner and outer courtyards corresponding respectively to Briah and Yetzirah, all have their own vestibules. But on the Temple Mount, no vestibule is to be seen. This is because the Temple Mount corresponds to the world of Asiya, while the bread we have been discussing is bread from heaven. This is the food of the angels, and this is what the Israelites also ate when they were in the wilderness. The bread of Asiya, on the other hand, is literally the bread that comes forth from the earth, and this is on a far lower level, since it only comes forth after many changes and transformations. This is why these vestibules reached only the inside of the outer courtyard, the gallery surrounding the courtyard. Inside the walls of the outer courtyard stands a magnificent paved gallery at the same height as the gates. It surrounds the entire courtyard, except on the west. On this gallery stands 30 chambers. As you already know, ground level always corresponds to Malchut. The flow of blessing and sustenance first enters these chambers, and from there it descends to the courtyard below. Let me explain the purpose of these chambers on this gallery. They are for the three great and exalted chiefs, Shemuel, Memtet, and Yehuel, who are captains over all the armies of angels in the world of Yetzirah. Each has 10 chambers. Not that they ascend in these chambers, for as I have already told you, all the recipients receive from the gates. But it is into these chambers that the sustenance and blessing destined for these angels flows first, after which it is then given over to them. It is from these chambers that sustenance flows down to the rest of the courtyard. The chamber to the side of the sanctuary. Outside the inner courtyard, at the two ends of its western wall, stands two extraordinary chambers, 100 cubits in length. They are situated in the western section of the outer courtyard, parallel to the main temple building on its north and south sides. The width of these chambers is 50 cubits. Each has three stories, one on top of the other. Understand that these chambers are where the angels actually receive the sustenance given to them from around the outside of the sanctuary building, as discussed earlier. The sustenance flows out from the recess into the cells. As it leaves the cells, it merges into a single flow in the winding staircase. Then at a distance of 20 cubits, it reaches these chambers where the angels receive it. These chambers are designated for eating the holy sacrificial portions, for this is the sustenance that comes down to the branches after they rejoin their root and after the beautiful unification that is brought about through the sacrifice. But note how far away they, the angels, are when they receive their share of the holy offering, as compared to the souls of Israel, who receive their share from inside the sanctuary, since their sustenance comes from the incense, which is burned inside. This is why the sages said Israel's appointed place is further within than that of the ministering angels. Although these chambers are considered part of the inner courtyard, for even the holiest portions of Kodshei Kodashim may be eaten in these chambers, as in the Azarah, see how far away they are. The distance between the sanctuary building and these chambers on either side is 20 cubits, because the great light of the two yuds that built the interior of the sanctuary. Indeed, the entrances to these chambers actually face the temple building, since it is from there that they receive. These chambers also have other entrances on the side not facing the temple. These lead out to the northwest and southwest sections of the outer courtyard. I have already explained to you why the gates are 50 cubits high. These chambers are thus literally facing the cells, for it is from there that they receive. However, the chambers on the uppermost stories are shorter than the lower level chambers, because they receive from a very exalted place. Extending downwards from underneath the uppermost chambers are three great pillars. They descend from underneath the walls of the upper chambers. The walls are actually supported on these pillars. Thus, these three pillars come out from the uppermost walls and reach all the way down to the ground below. The walls of the lower chambers are built behind the pillars, and because of this, the lower chambers are wider than the upper chambers. This is mentioned in the verse, "And the uppermost chambers were narrow, for the pillars consumed part of them," namely part of the lower and middle chambers in the building. That is, the pillars consume part of the space of the lower chambers, which are built around them, while the pillar itself provides support for the wall of the upper chambers, which are therefore narrower than the lower chambers. For these pillars are not like the courtyard pillars at the ends of the walls of the vestibules of the gates. The latter are outside and received from their respective courtyards, which is why they rest upon them. But the function of the pillars of these chambers is to strengthen the building, and they enter into its very thickness. That is why these pillars push their way down into the lower chambers in order to provide a foundation for the upper chambers. The truth is that they emerge prior to the upper chambers, and after the emergence of the pillars, the wall was closed around them. As for the words in the verse, "The pillars consumed part of them," this indicates that not in every chamber is there a pillar, but there are three pillars in the entire wall. A place for cooking the holiest sacrificial portions. There is a place in the north of the outer courtyard, bounded on one side by these chambers and the temple building, and on the other by the western edge of the courtyard. This is where the sacrificial portions are cooked in preparation for the priests to eat them. Understand that cooking takes place in water, which is chesed, on fire, which is gevurah. The eastern chambers of the outer courtyard. Two more chambers, similar to the first, are situated in the eastern section of the outer courtyard, east of the inner court. One of these chambers is situated to the northeast of the third eastern chamber of the north gate, while the second chamber is situated to the southeast of the third eastern chamber of the south gate. In each case, these chambers are 100 cubits long and 50 cubits wide, with entrances on both sides. Let me explain their function. The upper chambers, those discussed previously, which are in the western section of the outer courtyard, parallel to the temple building, belong to the inner courtyard, for that is where the captains of the angels of the world of Beriah receive their share from behind the temple building. However, those we are discussing now belong to the outer courtyard. Here, the armies of the world of Yetzirah receive their share from the inner courtyard. The main flow of sustenance comes out through the gates, while the sustenance which the angels receive from these chambers derives from more exalted lights, of which the angels take their share here. These eastern chambers have openings directly into the inner courtyard itself. Thus, there are numerous openings for sustenance to reach the angels of Yetzirah. The inner chambers are at some distance from the temple building. However, the eastern chambers are directly adjacent to the northeast and southeast corners of the inner courtyard, for the light here does not have the same power as the light there, and therefore they are better able to withstand it. Place for cooking the less holy sacrificial portions. At the four corners of the outer court, there appeared four courts measuring 40 cubits long and 30 cubits wide. In them shine four great lights. Their function is to put power into the less holy sacrificial portions that may be eaten outside the Temple Mount, anywhere in Jerusalem, in order to prepare them and make them fit for their recipients. All preparations take place on the level of Malchut. Accordingly, these four lights are four names of Adonai. The reason why these courts are all 40 cubits long and 30 wide is that each of the four root letters of these names, when expanded, consists of three filling letters, and every letter contains all 10 sephirot. The four roots times 10 is equal to 40. Three filling letters times 10 is equal to 30. The vestibules in the courtyard walls. In the walls of the outer courtyard appeared structures in the form of vestibules, which act as receivers for the light spreading out from the temple building to the courtyard. When the light reached the walls, it made for itself places to dwell, but it did not have the power to burst through the walls, except at those points where the gates are, because the light of the three great luminaries reached these points. All these vestibules are based on the secret of the haze. This is true of all dwelling places. For this reason, these vestibules are 5 cubits wide. As the haze asserted themselves, the light intensified, making their length 5 times 5, or 25 cubits. The next section.
Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Of course.
I have a question. What good is it for us to know all this detail? How do we apply all this in our lives?
In the language of branches, these details connect to a root in an upper world. As you learn these details, it's really about making the connection to the upper world, to the root, and understanding the spiritual law that's being expressed here. A Mekubal will not teach that. It's something you have to arrive at from your own expanded consciousness. How does it affect your life today? Maybe it doesn't. But how does light, how does baking challah affect your light today? Your life today. You enjoy it. You feel good about it. If on that level alone, that's what these details are giving you. But on a more specific level, as you expand your consciousness, each of these sentences have many, many levels of connection, levels of understanding. The more you detail you know, the more you can be aware of the general. The universe is built, as they say, as a hologram. A general law and a specific law are all built on the same structure. If you don't understand the details, it's very difficult to relate to the general laws. I probably didn't satisfy you with that answer.
One of my other questions, I guess, relates to this, and that is that Rav Berg says the temple was really not destroyed, just the outer form. So somehow this is connected to that.
The temple is a building. I read a very, very lovely mashal today, a parable. Jeremiah was the prophet who had the responsibility to be around at the time of the destruction of the first temple and to lead the people into exile. And it says that when Nebuchadnezzar came to, the Mashal says that Nebuchadnezzar came to destroy the temple, that Plato, the Greek philosopher, was with him. And after the temple was destroyed, Plato found Jeremiah crying at the site of the temple. And Plato asked, why are you crying over a building? And why are you crying over the past? Look to the future. Jeremiah's response to Plato was, tell me the issues that you're dealing with. Tell me what you're thinking about. What is troubling you as a philosopher? And Plato then proceeded to give him whatever was going on at the time in their discussions, all the different issues. Because whether you know it or not, all of the Greek philosophies come out of the sages, comes out of the wisdom of the Kabbalah. That's just an aside to the parable. Plato gave him this whole list of, these are the things we're talking and wondering about, we don't understand. And Jeremiah, in a few sentences, a few words, just removed all of the confusion and explained everything to him and how it would all work. And then he said to him, just as this building is where I received the wisdom to answer your questions and your doubts and your concerns, I'm not crying over a building, I'm crying over the loss of that wisdom, the place where we could get that wisdom, where we could receive what we should do in our lives. And with respect to crying over the future or crying over the past, it's something that you really cannot understand. You're not on a level capable of understanding that we are not crying over the past. We're crying over the future that will manifest our past. Most people cannot understand that parable. What does it mean to cry over the future? The future is bright. The future we know, to return to the endless world. But how much pain and suffering does the world and people have to go through till they learn, till we learn? Because even if we think we know, we don't, as you know the rules of Kabbalah. Even if we think we know, we don't. There is so much more to know. Getting back to your original question, what's the benefit in knowing these details? What's the benefit in learning how to brush your teeth?
Are you waiting for an answer?
No, I'm just finished. It's a rhetorical question. Chris, go ahead, Chris.
I know the soul in us knows what's going on. If we don't know what's going on when we read these things,
yes and no, because this is a translation. And the soul knows the translation, but it also knows that it's losing energy. The soul doesn't feed on logic. There's an aspect of the soul that is connected to logic, but it's not fed by logic. It's fed by intuition.
Yes, correct.
Have I answered the questions?
You sure have. That's exactly what I mean.
I'm going to call it quits for today because I have a personal errand to run to. I apologize. Normally I would go to 6, but I'm running a little late. They have asked me to come a little early. Are there any questions before I leave? And I'm inviting you to the Ari tonight at 10. It's a very, very significant to make that connection.
What time we will light the candle tonight? What, at 10?
At 10. You can light your own earlier if it's sundown. Any other questions, Marcia? I really am enjoying your questions.
Well, I just appreciate opening up this topic. Obviously, for me, there's more research to be done. That website that you directed us to last night has a lot of information that, I don't know if I'm going to be able to thoroughly research it now, plus read the Sefer Yetzirah and the Ten Luminous Emanations. I'm really kind of overwhelmed with too many things being at the same time.
It gets deeper and deeper and deeper.
Lifetime to do it.
All I can say is you receive what you receive, and it's appropriate for where you are, and you will find that you don't understand the Ten Luminous Emanations, but it will help. Whatever you receive from it will help you deal with other aspects of your life. And whatever you receive from it will help you deal with other studies in the Kabbalah. It's all intertwined. They're not separate subjects. We present them as separate subjects because this is the world of separation. But they're not separate subjects. They're all unified.
I perceive much of that as laying a foundation.
Correct. Correct. But you don't know what's going to be built on that foundation, other than the temple.
Spiritual genius. Being a bigger vessel for life.
Amen. Amen. Have a beautiful evening.
Me too. Bye.